Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sozi. The show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a blog on our new website, which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
The voice you just heard is a man who is... I think this is about as exciting as Peyton Manning coming back to Indianapolis.
The return of Tyler Hansbrough.
That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
The ambassador of white basketball.
I am excited. I'm kind of wondering who he's going to pick a fight with tonight.
Probably.
Because you know what's going to happen.
Probably not a big scary black guy after his bump in with Meta World Peace online. Look it up. It's great. It's a real clip. It's terrific. And joining me, the film writer for Nouveau News Weekly, and my colleague of the Indiana Film Journalists Association, Ed Johnsonod. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Matt. Hi, pointillist.
This is the time of year we get to really see each other. This is third time this week, because we are now in grown-up movie season, press screening, award screening season. So this is why we braved the summer, apparently.
It's a nice payoff, I'll tell you. Because we're not going to get to see Hunger Games, however.
Yeah,
I guess you're going to miss Hunger Games.
No,
they're not
going to
screen it here.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Oh, by the way, Kobe, this is a proper word term of the use of the word we.
We.
I make fun of sports fans that say we because they're not the ones on the court or the field or the diamond. So, they're not screening that. So they're sticking it to the press. So I guess we will have to see it with regular folk. So that's fine.
Regular folk are so distracting.
They are very distracting. We will count the children. We will count the texting. We will count all the interruptions that are happening during Hunger Games. Nobody listening to this show, of course. Pass it along to your knuckleheaded friends and neighbors. Please do. Okay, we're going to start with, we'll make reference to what is opening this week. We have Diana, which is a biopic, although probably not a biopic. I heard it's more of a section of a bio of Princess Diana, and she's played by Naomi Watts. Naveen Andrews is in this as well. And then we'll get to Thor in a little bit, as well as All Is Lost. Now, I should explain, Ed's reviewing one film and I'm reviewing another. So we're going to give you a little bit of background on, what happened to us this week, which happens sometimes with film, screenings and press screenings.
Mm-hmm.
Monday evening was the official advance screening for Thor. And, it was going to be shown in 3D, or so we thought. And we get into the film, we put the 3D glasses on, and it looked awful. It looked really weird and bad, and after about 5 minutes, they stopped the film. It's happened. So.
But please note that after 5 minutes, they stopped the film.
Right, not 30 seconds. Well, and it's fun to sit there because you're looking down the aisle to see who you think somebody... You think somebody on the aisle, I guess we should, I remember George Carlin had a comedic bit that the representative of the row should be at the end.
Uh-huh.
So you're hoping somebody from the end of the row are going to get down and let the folks know, hey, it's looking bad. And so finally, I know I went and I know a couple other people went, and so they stopped the film. So take two still doesn't work.
And what we're talking about here is, you know what 3D films look like when you don't have your glasses on? That's pretty much what it looked like with your glasses on.
Yes. And there were subtitles because it's a fantasy film and you have to have a fantasy language. And we could barely read it. So 5 minutes into take two, still doesn't work, stops again. Now, to clarify what I wrote on social media this week, after the second attempt failed, mm-hmm. I thought they had called it off because I heard our rep say, come outside and I'll take notes. And by the way, when something goes wrong at a screening, don't yell at the rep. She didn't deliver the film. He or she didn't deliver the film. He or she didn't push play. So just little point of order on that. So I was under the assumption that the screening was canceled. I left. Because mm-hmm. if it takes you three attempts to start a film and it's supposed to be shot in 3D, it's supposed to be presented in 3D, and you can't do that, I have other things to do.
No, I hung out because I like watching people be mad.
And were they... Yes, you do. Were they, and how was the crowd? Were they fairly hostile or?
The majority of them were just complacent. But there was a fairly good number of hostile people.
And really?
They stuck around. Oh, yes. You know why? Because you're not giving them free stuff. And if you don't give them free stuff, they're going to get mad at you.
Oh, okay.
So, but it sounds like they did go through with it, but it wasn't in 3D.
It was really weird. They announced that they had called and that Disney had canceled the screening because of this. And, you know, it was a corrupted print.
Print, folks.
Well, yeah. Corrupted file. And most people started leaving at that point. They were taking information outside to get them to another movie, presumably. Then we asked them, since two of the members of our critics group had driven down from Lafayette.
Yeah.
And we all had deadlines. We asked if we could just go ahead and see it. And they said, absolutely not, absolutely not. And then they left the room for a couple minutes and they said, sure. I don't know how that happened, but they went ahead and screened the film for us.
Good PR on their half, I mm-hmm. think, so to accommodate you guys.
And so we watched the film, and the print was just as bad as we talked about. But most 3D films... The vast majority of the stuff is in distant scenes, and you know, the close-up action is clear,
okay.
whether you have the glasses on or not. So we were able to watch it, you know. You just filter out the bad stuff.
So once you got – I guess it's kind of like even we talked about this off-air, Kobe. Even with the – sometimes after – once you get used to the flowery language, you get to follow the story a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Just point of reference for – period piece
next
film
week's show.
Yeah, for next week's show. So okay, so that being said, Ed, you stuck around for Thor: The Dark World or
right.
Thor 2.
Still Thor.
Still Thor. More Thorer.
Two more movies, and it's going to be Thor 4.
Oh boy. Rhymes. So Ed, your thoughts on the new Thor picture?
I had a good time. I enjoyed myself. There was a nice mixture of, as far as the characters, of the bombast of all the Asgardian. Not gods, but
god-esque.
Really god-esque characters and a good dose of humor. Chris Hemsworth's really good in that role.
He's. You know. I remember seeing the first film, and the first thing I wrote down was "roided up Brad Pitt."
Yes, yeah,
and not the smartest of the Avengers, but effective.
Yeah, and that's part of what makes him work is that, you know, I mean, he's this big looming stud that's kind of dumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like great power and low brains. I like that mixture. It's what makes the Tea Party so interesting. You know. It's funny. The action scenes for a superhero film, it's hard to avoid the, you know, falling into the superhero formula, especially on Marvel films. But they found some ways to get around it. There's holes in the universe in the movie, and I don't need to explain it more than that. There's holes in the universe where you pop in one place and all of a sudden you appear somewhere else. And first, early in the film, they just show that to us and it's fun watching it. Then later in the big action scene, those holes are part of it. So you have not only the standard superhero fight with mega special effects, but you have people popping in and out all over the place, which disrupts the flow of the battle for them and keeps things lively.
Okay.
Remember at the beginning of the second X-Men movie, that great scene with Nightcrawler popping all through the White House?
Yes.
It was really cool. This is a not as cool but still neat version of the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what it tickled me about Thor, the first Thor, was it seemed like they had spent all this money on the god-esque world, and then as an afterthought, you had Fake Town, New Mexico, something that looked like a 50s Universal lot, and it looked like it was a town that had been created merely to be destroyed in an action film. Now, I hear Fake Town, New Mexico was replaced by London.
Yes. Yeah, and it breaks much harder.
It's a little more expensive, I think.
Yeah, I think the first film they used the sets from Blazing Saddles.
The ones that fooled Slim Pickens and company. That's good.
But this one is in London, and it works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they destroy things effectively.
You want that in a superhero movie.
I think you want that in an action film. You want things destroyed effectively.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't feel like just mayhem. You know how the last Superman movie, that numbing 45 minutes of just watching them smash stuff?
Yes.
That doesn't feel like that here. You know, you feel like you're watching people fight each other and, you know, the way pure movies should be.
American.
So actually, and Jim Mueller, our colleague here at FYI, brought this up. And so you mentioned the last Superman film. He made a point of when two giant forces hit each other, they don't necessarily knock each other six blocks.
Right.
Does that happen in this one?
Oh, not noticeably enough that anything's popping to mind right now.
Okay. All right. So.
Yeah, it's entertaining. The Asgardians, Anthony Hopkins is the most dull because he's just a tired authority figure.
Mm-hmm.
Rene Russo is his wife and Thor's mom, and she's more spirited and fun.
You see her fighting a little bit in the trailer, and I'm hoping we get some Lethal Weapon flashbacks because she could kick tail 20 years ago.
Alas, no. But we have Idris Elba as...
everyone's favorite dark-skinned Norseman.
Yeah, and he's the guardian of Asgard, which Asgard, by the way, looks like the Emerald City, only more butch. But Idris Elba is really cool as the guardian of Asgard.
Does he get more to do in this one?
Not a lot, but he just has more presence, he's just more interesting. He's a cool guy.
Yeah. Well, he's also getting ready for butt-kicking Nelson Mandela, which comes out later this year.
Man. Man, I remember him when he had a stint on The Office where he had one of the best lines because of his delivery. He had the women fawning over him, and they had a brief shot of him talking to the camera and going, "I'm aware of my effect on women." And it just was, there's not many people that could say that and mean it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And does Natalie Portman do anything?
Natalie Portman's fine. Okay. You know, anything that might bother you about her is negated by her best friend character, and I don't remember the actress.
Kat Dennings, for your fans of Two Broke Girls.
She apparently wandered into the movie from New Girl or The Mindy Project so that she could do kicky one-liners. And... she has an intern, so we have the designated comic relief has her own comic relief.
So, Cope, that means you need an intern.
Yeah.
The film sociology intern?
That'd
no,
be
we're
cool.
not going to. No, that would not be cool.
That would be
cool.
To do quippy, sarcastic one-liners.
Because we don't do that enough on our own.
And Stellan Skarsgård is...
We see a lot of... there's one scene at the very beginning that we see a lot of him.
Yeah, he runs around naked at Stonehenge, and we see that on the news clip.
And there's a Spinal Tap joke there, but we're not going to.
And then later in the film, when they rescue him from the mental institution, he was terrible because he was naked at Stonehenge. He works with them in the lab wearing a long-sleeved shirt and tidy whities because he thinks more effectively without pants.
Mm-hmm. Every sitcom husband father reference right there.
Yeah, there's this great exchange where Natalie Portman looks at some stuff she's been studying and says, "This could do blah 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 and actually destroy the very fabric of reality." And he goes, "I better get my pants."
Remember that, folks. Get your pants. But it sounds like he had a good time nonetheless.
It's fun. I had a good time. You know, in some ways I enjoyed it more than the first one.
Okay.
Now that was a good movie.
There you go.
All right, so there's that. And, of course, you can read Ed's reviews on What Ed Said?
Is no.
It, is that, okay, sorry.
What Ed Said's dead right now.
But not, Zed's dead too. So,
the company that got the money for the domain has stopped answering anything and all their sites are down.
I see. Sorry.
But they kept the money, oddly enough.
Oddly enough. But anyway, you can also check it out at Nuvo.net.
Nuvo.net.
So there's that. All right. Also opening in theaters today. So anyway, we continue with, I left Monday because I was frustrated and I had other things to do. So I prepared because we thought the new film version of Great Expectations,
right,
directed by Mike Newell, was also going to open Friday. So I thought, okay, fine. I won't see Thor. I'll see Dickensian stuff, as Kobe likes to put it. And then we get a notice Thursday, the day before it's supposed to open, that they've delayed the opening. My guess is to bring the book club people to rally more, and they'll be here next
and
week.
And a day after Nouveau was in print.
Right. So you can see Ed's review. Ed was just following protocol, so it's there. So if you want to see it, it's up there. So now I'm like, I'm not going to be able to see anything. Then, of course, I checked the what's going to be opening, you know, at 10:30 in the morning Friday, which happens quite often. And lo and behold, I was happy to see that All Is Lost is opening, starring Robert Redford.
Well, this is so weird because it's a movie starring Robert Redford that's gotten a lot of good reviews. And we didn't hear anything about it. Even TV ads didn't pop up till midweek.
Yeah. It's also written and directed by the gentleman who gave us Margin Call, which was a film that got a screenplay nomination last year. Now, about the economic crisis. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a film that is coming after the film Gravity. And every now and then there'll be two similar stories, or two similar styles of stories that come out at the same time.
Like Oblivion and After Earth?
Kind of Oblivion, After Earth.
Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Deep Impact. Wyatt Earp and Tombstone. What's it, The Core? That doesn't matter. And, of course, the two Capote films, Capote and Infamous. And this one also reminds me of 120, when there was 127 Hours and Buried. Buried, Kobe, you might like Buried because it's the concept of Ryan Reynolds buried underground in a box.
Not a canay?
No, not really.
No, Kobe has a list because he's got a 2 in his age and he can compile lists. But Ryan Reynolds is on this list. Anyway, it's actually probably the best thing Ryan Reynolds has ever done. So this is the follow-up. So instead of Sandra Bullock floating in space, we have Robert Redford floating at sea. And I think after this, we're done with the survival films between Gravity, Captain Phillips, and this.
And 12 Years a Slave.
That's floating in a different type of hell. But yes, you're right about that.
But I mean, as far as You Are There movies.
Big time.
We've been hit with them big this fall.
And this is, of course, this is what we get for griping about the bad summer.
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to a colleague. It's almost like the film industry said, you want good movies? Here they are. And they're really intense and they're really tough. It's almost like Robert Duvall hitting you with a basketball in The Great Santini constantly. So, Robert Redford plays a gentleman who basically, it's very simple. He's at sea. Hole in the boat. Survive. It almost sounds like an improv. Go.
I heard there's not even a name.
It's also very little dialogue, folks. So this isn't Castaway. He's not talking to seagulls or volleyballs or the ship or anything. He's just trying to survive. And it's about an hour and 45 minutes, and it's white knuckles all the way.
Is it so it stays interesting all the way through?
I think it does. Probably if there was a quibble, the last third of the film, because we go from ship to life raft, but there's a few shots I thought it almost looked like Terrence Malick was brought in for second unit work.
Oh, no.
No, not like 2.5 hours of, you know, undersea kingdom shots. There's a couple of them, but they're not 45 minutes long.
Were there dinosaur fish?
No dinosaur fish. No, and that's the other thing. It's not a big message about, you know, staying afloat is not a symbol of existence as we know it. No, this is just an old guy that's trying not to drown.
Huh.
And it's really, really riveting. And in some cases, I would say it's even better than Gravity because with Gravity, you had the beginning and you have an the ending of it. It wraps itself up in a nice little bow. And there are no bows in this film. It starts and it ends. And so probably not the biggest date film in the world, but who cares? It's really well done.
Are there sharks?
Yes, but not used in the plot as normally is. It's almost like when you see a shark in the water, it has to be used.
Right.
Not in this case.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. They are out there. They are acknowledged. But no, Robert Shaw does not, or Roy Scheider doesn't come and help out Redford.
And he doesn't punch a shark in the nose.
He does not punch a shark in the nose.
Wow.
Or stick a flare in its teeth. So, it's just really well done. But be prepared to be, it's not as gut wrenching as say, or anything happens as gut wrenching as say 127 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also watching this and you don't need Dramamine. And you know, I didn't need Dramamine during Captain Phillips, and that's a big deal with Paul Greengrass films. But I would say if you had, because with Gravity, there was a little bit of the Sandra Bullock character being reborn because of what had happened to her before she came to space. And we get no background history on Redford. And he's doing a lot. He's climbing, he's fixing, he's in the water. And I'm intrigued to know how much of this was on location and how much was in a giant tank. That's what the Blu-ray is for. Because they don't tell you when it's actually happening. You know, tank, studio, so.
It sounds like it would be interesting to read the script to see what drew him in initially.
I would too. And this is really, I mean, Redford was in a film he did earlier this year, The Company You Keep, which was not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's 77, I think, if I read right. And, and he's moved on to do other things and he doesn't have to act. And I know I think he's probably more interested in directing, I'm guessing. But I can't think of the last really solid Redford performance that immediately comes to mind. I guess we have to go back. Jeez. Can't think of anything in the 90s. I can't think of, I don't know, Brubaker. Can we go to the 70s maybe? So that's something I'll have to check in on.
Since All the President's Men?
Mr. Slagle, would you go to IMDb and pull up Robert Redford's page, please?
I'm on it.
You're on it. Thank you. Because once he started directing with Ordinary People, he was more, I think, interested in becoming a director than he needed to act. And he wasn't doing, at least not as much as others, where, you know, when you saw him in a film, you're like, oh, he's doing this so he can help get the Sundance Film Festival off the ground.
Right.
Kind of similar to Olivier with the National Theater or De Niro with Tribeca. How you doing over there?
I got it.
Okay, go to Actor.
Uh-huh.
And scan down. Hit us with some titles because my brain is freezing.
Well, where do you want to start?
What do you have at the top?
Pre-production stuff for next year.
Don't care. Nothing hadn't happened yet. I haven't reviewed it yet.
Okay. All Is Lost, The Company You Keep, Lions for Lambs, Charlotte's Web, An Unfinished Life, The Clearing, Spy Game, Last Castle, The Horse Whisperer. We're at 98 now.
Horse Whisperer.
Horse Whisperer is one he got knighted by the state of Montana for its for its lovely tourism shots. Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
Up Close and Personal, Indecent Proposal, River Runs Through It, Sneakers, Havana, Legal Eagles, Out of America, The Natural, Brubaker in 80. The Electric Horseman, 79, A Bridge Too Far, All the President's Men, 3 days.
3 days of the Condor. So yep. Probably, okay. Wow. So, yeah, I would say this is near the top of his game.
Cool.
So, there you go. Kobe, do you have a response? I know I'm making you do all sorts of stuff on the way.
Yes!
There's that.
Go see it.
So, Kobe, what's happening at your alma mater?
At my alma mater. Tonight, Friday night, IU Cinema, 6:30 p.m., Forever Mozart, comedy, drama, foreign language from 1996. At 9:30 tonight, In Praise of Love, and The Devil in Miss Jones at midnight. Tonight.
Really?
Yep, midnight movies.
Wow, way to go, IU.
Tomorrow, Saturday, The Taking of Pelham 123 from 1974.
Ah, the original. Really good. Walter Matthau, mm-hmm. Charles, Robert Shaw, Martin Balsam, Hector Elizondo. Really cool. Yes, this was ladies and gentlemen, there was an period in the early to mid 70s where Walter Matthau was an action star by 70s standards. There was Charlie Varick. I remember because I just bought this. I found this for $3 at Half Price Books. Like 2 months ago, directed by Don Siegel. There was this film, which is really a lot of fun. You know what it is, Kobe?
Hmm.
Potboiler.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And then The Laughing Policeman, where he's teamed up with Bruce Dern in a detective film in the early 70s. Kobe, the 70s?
Different time.
Different time.
Totally.
What else you got there?
Let's see. Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3 is tomorrow at 3 p.m. King Lear from 87 is on at 6:30. Hail Mary from 1985 at 9:30 tomorrow night. And then Sunday at 3 o'clock, Cuba, an African Odyssey. And 6:30, one of your favorites, Matthew, from last year, documentary, Searching for Sugar Man.
Oh, very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. And that is Academy Award-winning documentary, Searching for Sugar Man.
Thank you.
So it's funny, now that you bring up that, there's a DVD company called The Film Movement. Mm-hmm. Lisa Trifone, our old friend who has been a guest on the show many times, works for them now. There was a film that came out last month, I hope I'm saying it right, it's Alia. And it's French and Israeli, if I remember right. It's set in Paris, and there's a drug dealer trying to get out of the business. And he wants to go with a friend of his, a cousin, who is opening a restaurant in Tel Aviv. And so he's going to try to get out of the drug dealing business and help out his friend. Mm-hmm. But instead of it being about the job, the one last job that has been, you know, that plot line has been shoved down our throats for decades, it's more about him embracing his Jewish roots. And there's a little bit of him trying to finish the score. It also doesn't help that the drug dealer's boss is his own brother. But there is one montage in the film, and it's acceptable because they use Sugar Man by Rodriguez. Hmm. So pretty effective. But a good drama when it's not about the one last job. And, of course, as we all know, the last job never goes off as planned.
Never goes right.
So, but we don't have that problem with this film. So there's one other picture that came out a couple of months back. And I finally got to it on the DVR because, and it was CNN Films, and it's a documentary called Blackfish.
Right.
This is the, for lack of a better term, this is the don't ever go to SeaWorld or any sea circus type events because they treat the animals horrible. And if you need proof of that, there's this film. A really, at times, hard to watch film of footage. A lot of it is found footage by witnesses of accidents gone bad at places like SeaWorld, and all of the knockoffs, which the training by the employees are not as stellar as the ones at SeaWorld. A lot of former mm-hmm. employees are interviewed for this. Big shock. SeaWorld declined several interview requests for this film, but it's really, you understand how they get into how a lot of these young kids get into the business because of the animals, to communicate with the animals, to interact, and then to find out how they are treated and the politics that goes around when and spin doctors that go with it.
Right.
When things go bad, and it's a lot more than you think, and it's a lot more than it's reported.
I thought it was too long. I it felt like it would be a good segment on a news magazine show, but it didn't need to be as long as it was.
And it's only, I think, hour and a half, maybe, if that.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, you get the message across mm-hmm. pretty quick. But it's at times a rough watch. Not in the, you know, blood and gut sense of it, but to hear stories of people getting dragged by a whale. And, you know, these are the trained ones. These are not the goofs.
Yeah.
You know, messing, you know, sticking their arms in the cage and other zoo catastrophes. So, anyway, I think there should be a release of it maybe by the end of the year. But CNN put it out, and so they had it on their station. And I finally got to catch up with it last week. So,
did you cover next Las Vegas on the show?
No. It's supposed to not be The Hangover. It just happens to be old people in Las Vegas.
It's really bad. I don't know how to diplomatically phrase this. If you're really old in, you know how they say like 70s the new 50 now, or
right?
All right. If you're not one of those people,
that's a thing.
If you're, it actually is. It's only said by people that are almost 70, but but you know, the old hip people. If you're not one of those, if you're a traditional old person, you may enjoy it. At least at the screening I was at, there were lots of traditionally old people, and they were having a wonderful time.
Did they clap afterwards?
They clapped a lot.
Of course they did.
But it's just, I love seeing those actors, especially Kevin Klein. I haven't seen him in a long time.
Right.
But they're doing really tired one-liners and really tired situations. And it's one of those films, there is four old guys that go off for a bachelor party in Las Vegas. De Niro.
Morgan Freeman. Michael Douglas. And, of course, there's a little wink and a nod to Michael Douglas's real life.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But the thing is, it's a film where people around them keep talking about what crazy, wild men they are all throughout the movie while they don't do anything particularly crazy or wild.
Hmm.
You know, it's just tiresome and disappointing and kind of sad, except that the people at the screening I attended that paid for it were real, real happy.
Okay.
So
it feels like, and especially with De Niro, there seems like he's getting chances to work with actors he's never worked with before.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look through his last 10 films, there's a number of people that, oh, so he finally gets to work with so-and-so. And
he's in the sour mood for 3/4 of the film, and then he's in an emotional mood, and then there's like maybe 2 smiles toward the end.
Ooh.
You counted.
He's paid by the smile, really. it's kind of in his contract.
And it's the first time, too, there were a couple scenes in the film where I questioned Morgan Freeman's acting skills, and that's never happened
really?
To me before. Really? Yeah.
Now, is that, his character had a stroke, or he was recovering?
No, he was just...
Just a shut-in?
I don't remember his circumstances.
Okay.
Maybe I had a stroke.
No, you didn't have a stroke. But I think if I read right, he has the overprotective son.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Yeah, he's tired of being mollycoddled,
okay.
And he's ready to live it up. But there's a scene where he's supposed to be acting like he's buzzed on some chemicals. And
nobody involved probably knew anything about the chemical to begin with.
And he's not very convincing. And, I mean, you don't say that about Morgan Freeman.
No.
But he's trying to play kind of wacky, drunk, stoned, and he's not very good at it.
Mm.
Who'd have thought?
There's a footnote in the imperfection of that.
Well, the nice thing is, though, that the people that will object to all this, they'll be too slow to chase me down the street. They wouldn't be able to catch me.
Come and get them, folks.
So, yeah.
All right, we'll take a short break, and we'll talk about what is on DVD and Blu-ray, and we'll talk a little bit more about the stunt work of Hal Needham, because I kind of breezed through it pretty quick last week, and we get to hang out with Ed Johnson Odd. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
And here he is again. Yes. It's Matthew Soucy.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, you're definitely not Tyler Hansborough, Cobe, and that's really a good thing. You can read.
That's right.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Hanging out with Ed Johnsonat of Nuvo and Kobe, and we can never tell you what's going on during the breaks. You're just going to have to talk to us on the street, and even then we might not tell you.
But we do know that Morgan Freeman's character indeed was recovering from a stroke in Last Resort.
So, yes.
Thanks, Dad.
I was going to say thank you, Fort Myers, but that so according to Kobe, we now have a cult following in Fort Myers and Upland, California.
That's right.
Got to work on the remote. All right, we go to the DVD and Blu-ray titles, and now, of course, speaking of DVD and Blu-rays and video stores, I guess Blockbuster is now closing the last 300 actual buildings that were still left, and I thought they were already gone.
Yeah,
there was a story just as I was pulling into the lot on. You, the other station here,
mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know what you call the established one, 90.1.
Oh, the HD1? So things considered.
There's a couple of Blockbusters that are staying in business up in Alaska, I believe. And they were talking about...
Because Sarah Palin hasn't shut them down yet.
It was something to do with the band, not enough bandwidth for people to stream movies as much up there.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and that they were staying in business. It was real interesting.
So... there's still hope if you really need to go up to Anchorage.
Willing to head north.
That's right. And it still reminds me of, now we get into the family portion of the story. Last year's season of South Park,
mm-hmm.
their Halloween episode was about Stan's dad buying an old Blockbuster for $10,000 with the hopes that it would really bring people in. And, of course, it doesn't. And it was South Park's version of The Shining.
Oh.
So, you know, you get the place cards in black and white, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday. And as the week goes on, it's coming up to Halloween. Nobody's coming. The ghosts are making fun of him. And Stan's dad, of course, turns more and more like Jack Torrance in The Shining. Long story short, the former children's film correspondent, Emma Soucy, saw this. Heard me talking about the film, heard me talking about Room 237, the documentary, and she's now said she's ready to watch The Shining.
Oh, dear.
In the daytime, as I was told.
Good.
So she's 12 now, and I told her the stories of... I saw The Shining not in theaters, thanks, Dad, but on HBO. So I was probably about 11 or 12. And I also had a cousin, who I will not name. This is the cousin that you could jab in the side, and she would absolutely flip out. And then 5 minutes later, do it again. So
that's me.
That's you?
Yep.
You guys poke each other in the side during... You, Bianca, don't watch scary movies. We've talked about this.
No, well, no. On the rare occasion that we do, yeah. You know, you settle into the mood of the movie, and then all of a sudden, I'll get a, like, jab, and then, oh, yeah, it's...
Newlyweds.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing there's not a scary Jane Austen movie, or you'd really be messed up.
No, those terrify him as well. We talked. I told him about
There's enough problems with those as it is.
I told the story about the Jane Austen book club that was in company with us when we saw Austenland.
Oh my God.
So for those who didn't tell, we got a half hour. What the hell? Now, we preface this by saying a few years ago, I remember, Abdul and I talk about this, Abdul Kim Shabazz, he was at the Monday 10 a.m. press screening with us of Watchmen. So this was downtown at Circle Center, and it was the press guys and about maybe 50 to 70 VIPs, and I think these were guys who spent a lot of money, and a few girls, at the comic book store downtown. And I remember Abdul kind of doing a profanity-laced quiet tirade to us, like, blankety blank. I know why you guys are here. I know why I'm here. Where are these guys here? It's Monday morning. It's 10 a.m. Get a damn job. So I tell you that to say that about a month ago, it was over a month, when Austin Land was screened for us. It was a Friday morning, 11 a.m. at Landmark Cinemas, and I go into Circle Center, or go into Keystone Crossing, go up the escalator, I see Ed, and I see about 30 women.
Yes.
And they're not, and I thought, where are the hats? Aren't they, and these are the red hat ladies or something like this, and they're all milling out in front. And so I go in, and I talk to our theater contact, and who the hell are they? And they went, oh, that's the Indianapolis chapter of the Jane Austen Book Club.
Yikes.
And I went, oh, they're going to be joining us. Now, normally as folks of the IFJA, we're like, okay, this is fine to come in. And everybody knows everybody. Somebody brought a baby. That made my butt clench. But fortunately, the child slept through the movie, so I have to give props to the baby for sleeping.
Which means obviously the kid was paying attention to it.
But yes. So, and they all knew each other, and it was just, I was wondering how chatty they were going to be through the movie, but they got into it, and of course they enjoyed it, and nobody asked us what we thought, and that's probably for the best, because we didn't want to get flogged by purses.
When Jennifer Coolidge is the high point of the movie, you're in trouble.
But even then, she owes a little bit to Christopher Guest. She felt like a character from one of her Chris Guest films.
For me, it was like she was trying so hard to be that movie's version of Rodney Dangerfield in Caddyshack.
a loud fish out of water, big time.
Oh.
So yeah, Cobe, that film's going to come out on DVD and Blu-ray eventually.
Well, yeah, I mean, most of the time that happens with movies.
Just so. Warning you, dude.
It's going to be released directly to the remainder bin, though, just to save time.
Okay, so, and by the way, still Blockbuster's around. So I guess you have to do a search and see if there are any in Indiana. Good luck with that. The big title, by the way, we're not reviewing Grown Ups 2. I didn't see it. Ed didn't see it. We sat through the first one. I remember calling it the worst film of that year. Let's move on.
Well, you know, there's bad things about the newspaper business being in trouble and how newspapers get smaller and smaller. But one of the good things about that is that I have less space, which means that when movies like Grown Ups 2 comes out, I can skip them.
Ta-da!
Oh.
So there's that. However, we are going to talk a little bit about White House Down, which
Yay.
Is the... This is the second of the Die Hard at the White House films.
It's the good one.
It's the better one, yeah.
What was the other one?
Olympus Has Fallen.
Yes.
This was Aaron Eckhart, and this one had a pedigree cast. You had a lot of Oscar nominees and winners in it. Morgan Freeman, Melissa Leo, Aaron Eckhart, Gerard Butler, who was a producer on this, it showed, and... Robert Forrester was in this as well.
Is Denzel Washington in Olympus Has Fallen?
No. No, there's no black president in Olympus Has Fallen. So this is the conservative version of the Die Hard at the White House.
No, but eventually...
Morgan Freeman becomes the president.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, eventually. But not at the start. So, and Ashley Judd, the most beautiful first lady since Jackie Kennedy.
When White House Down came out, most of the critics, especially in this area... We ran around jumping up and down, waving our arms and telling you to go see this movie, and people didn't. And go get it now. It's
the better. The problem I had with Olympus Has Fallen is I wanted the tone of White House Down in that film.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to do Die Hard at the White House, do it.
Yeah.
Make it big, make it dumb, make it loud. But I think because there were so many big name actors that wanted to do something, because you hired them, they have to do something as opposed to just hand-wringing. And it kind of bogged down the story. Well, we don't have any of that issue here.
Not at all.
No, we have Channing Tatum and President Jamie Foxx. And by the way, I would love to do the strategy on how you have Jamie Foxx as the president, Michael Murphy is the vice president for you fans of Robert Altman films, and then you have Richard Jenkins as the Speaker of the House.
Okay.
So, by the way, I love to say Academy Award nominee Richard Jenkins. He deserves that credit. Maggie Gyllenhaal is in this film as well. And Tatum wants to get a job in the working for the president, and happens to be in the White House when it is taken over.
And he doesn't get the job initially because Maggie Gyllenhaal says that he's just too much of a loose cannon.
But he doesn't slam his badge and his gun down because he didn't get the job.
No, and his little girl happens to be in the White House.
And by the way, here's the thing. Now, this is a film that is big and dumb and loud, as I said. But there's a moment I think it even goes way off my dumb meter. And this is the guy, you're talking to the guy that recommended Machete and Red and The Expendables and Kick-Ass.
Mm-hmm.
But the plucky 12-year-old daughter.
It's dumb.
It is dumb. We're getting to it. But the plucky 12-year-old girl who doesn't like her dad. Mom and dad are divorced. So guess what, Cobb? Daughter and dad don't get along at the beginning of the film. You know how that's going to turn out.
Are they going to reconcile things?
I'm not telling you. You have to go right there.
It's dumb.
When he's saving the president of the United States, you think they might reconcile?
Gosh, Dad, I still don't like you. But this character, the 12-year-old, who really incorporates herself, she has lots of plot things happening, Cobb.
Yeah.
But she's obsessed.
A lot going on there.
A lot going on there. She is obsessed with the White House.
Yes, absolutely.
She loves it. She's got the blanket. You know, I listen to Richard Pryor albums under the blankets and read magazines that I really had no business looking at under the sheets when I was a child. Not this girl. She's watching presidential press conferences. And
learning about the secret presidential tunnels of Kennedy.
Which didn't happen, but they do happen. That being said, there's a scene where she and Channing Tatum enter the White House and she doesn't know that cars get searched. I got a problem with it. If you're going to be dumb, be consistent. So I had major issues with that. Not since, and this is the same director that gave us Independence Day, not since Will Smith took down the
This is the same director that gave us Godzilla.
That's true, the 90s version of Godzilla. But not since he turned down the blades, or what do you... Oh, God, I'm having a brain freeze. The things in the car that block out the sun.
The visors.
The visors. When you turn down the visors and keys fall into his hand. It's that big a moment of, oh, please. So that happens, and then we get into Die Hard, and the film there is a plot point involving one of the actors I already mentioned. Oh, James Woods is in this as well. By the way, when you cast James Woods, no real shock of his character.
No.
But I bet there's the mall crowd probably still don't see it coming, and it's only because they never saw Salvador or anything of James Woods in the 80s. But there's a plot twist near the end, not needed. And it just makes the film too long. It's about 2 hours and 10 minutes, and you could probably shave about 20 minutes off of this easily.
Not for me.
Not for you? You wanted all of it?
I liked every minute. I had fun. Oh, my God. And watching Jamie Foxx, he does a cursory presidential-style speech, and then he gets off to what he really wants to do, which is do a male buddy cop movie with Channing Tatum. And so you have the president and Channing Tatum, the job applicant, running around swapping good-natured wisecracks while the world is collapsing around them. And it's fun.
Yes.
It's all fun. I mean, this is so dumb and so fun. Oh.
We're using that, Cole.
It's dumb.
Now we have a counter for that. So
it's also an art film.
It's not an art film. It's definitely not an art film. It's playing in theaters everywhere. Now it's in blockbusters everywhere.
That's not what I said.
Okay, Kobe's turning into the morning zoo crew now.
Wow.
So, all right. So, yeah, big dumb. Yeah, get a six-pack, get bad food, and enjoy White House Down.
It really is fun.
So there's also out on DVD and Blu-ray.
You could do?
What could you do?
You could watch. You could get two sets in the living room and watch Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down at the same time.
And see if there's a connection?
Yeah.
See if any scenes match up. This is our version of Room 237.
Or Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon.
So you could play 2112 and see if anything links up.
No, 2112 and Strange Brew. You're going to do Canadian stuff. So, yeah, this is... That's right, folks. Film sociology. Your home for cinematic head trips. Maybe. Can't prove it.
We don't know yet.
We don't know.
We haven't done it yet.
By the way, we don't condone such actions, but if you do, let us know. All right. So other titles that are out. There's, do you remember, Ed, do you remember when Brian De Palma films being released was an event? Remember when it was kind of a big deal?
Yeah, Once Upon a Time.
Once Upon a Time. Well, there was a new De Palma film. I barely remember.
He copies Hitchcock if you're not unfamiliar with it.
I thought that was Paul Verhoeven's job now. No. but there's something he did that came out, I think, in 2012, and now it's out, called Passion, with Rachel McAdams and Noomi Rapace. For you fans of the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically a young businesswoman who plots to murder her boss who took some of her ideas. Now, it being Brian De Palma, I'm wondering how much girl-on-girl action there is in this because it's Brian De Palma. If you remember Dressed to Kill and, well, the really way long locker room scene in Carrie and Femme Fatale. So you've been warned. But it's Rachel McAdams and Noomi, so there's that. Nice. Also out, Amanda Siegfried playing Linda Lovelace in a biopic.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to see that. I mean, I've heard it's really sad, but good in a good way, and I was curious, but I didn't get
there. There is that. So now we go to some of the old titles. So these are the hard-hitting questions that do you need these films on Blu-ray? Do you, you know, first off, if you have the equipment and you have the setup, that's you're better than we are. But here are some of the titles that are now out on Blu-ray. So we ask, do you need this on Blu-ray? The Right Stuff.
Oh, yes. Essential.
Yes. Great film. And usually I'm not a fan when something looks like it's a recruiting film for fill in the blank. And this is a recruiting film for NASA, but it's really cool.
I would join.
Sam Shepard, Ed Harris, Dennis Quaid, lots of folks. And
Fred Ward,
Scott Glenn.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's
in their prime.
Pretty
Everybody.
Much. And it's a good balance of space stuff. And land stuff, how they get there.
Does that balance make the right stuff?
It does indeed make the right stuff.
There you go. Now we go to 1946, The Best Years of Our Lives. This was the William Wyler film with Myrna Loy, Frederick March, Dana Andrews, and it's basically soldiers coming home from World War II, and for some, life is better than others after combat.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also out. 1947's The Bishop's Wife. With everyone's favorite guardian angel, Cary Grant, and everyone's favorite bishop, David Niven. And he's married to Loretta Young.
Huh.
So that is also out. Apparently the James Dean collection is now out on Blu-ray. I thought it already was.
It's so hard to find those films.
I know. They're locked in a vault somewhere. But yes, you can get Rebel Without a Cause, Giant, and East of Eden now on Blu-ray.
You're tearing me apart!
The original You're Tearing Me Apart.
Eh.
You'll see. From 1973, the spaghetti western My Name is Nobody with Terrence Hill and Henry Fonda. I don't think this is getting a Criterion cleanup. As far as a Blu-ray treatment. I don't know why this is out on Blu-ray, but then again, I don't know why this film was ever made. And for me, I don't compile lists, but this one, I always say, I preface this by saying, I don't like, I'm going to be on the front porch looking at the damn kids. You know, folks younger than you, Kobe, and excessive use of the word ever.
Ever.
The best fill-in-the-blank ever, the worst fill-in-the-blank ever.
Similar to epic, everything being epic.
Kind of like that. So for me, with the ever rule is, you have to wait 5 years. And 5 years later, if you still have that immense love or hatred for something, then I think you could qualify to be one of the best or one of the worst fill-in-the-blanks ever. That being said, Surviving Christmas is out on Blu-ray.
Ooh.
A really, really, quite possibly the worst Christmas film ever made. With Ben Affleck, James Gandolfini, Christina Applegate. And it's a guy who kind of psychotically wedges his way into a family because he has no life and he has no family
of
his own.
It's an ugly movie.
It's a really nasty, vile film. So that's strong words. So, yeah, that might hit an ever category. So take note. For those ready for the Spike Lee remake, there is the 10-year anniversary of the Korean action film Old Boy.
Okay.
And from 1969, Alfred Hitchcock's Topaz.
I never saw that.
This is not scary. It's more political espionage.
Hmm.
So it won't freak you out, Kobe.
I'd watch that.
It might put you to sleep, but it won't freak you out. So,
Kobe, have you seen The Birds?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Did that freak you out?
Not really.
Okay. No.
And I made him watch Psycho, and that didn't freak him out either.
A little bit.
A little, but not... not enough to make
see,
you...
See, I think the problem with Psycho was because, I mean, it's been out... When was Psycho released?
1960.
Okay, so it's been around for 53
years.
3 years.
Yeah.
People know about it. You know something's going to... If you've not seen it, you know something is going to happen. You don't necessarily know what, but you know something's going to happen. So the whole time, you're waiting for that something to happen. You don't know what it is.
But
you're waiting for the whole time. And then something happens, and then it's a jumpy thing. So you're white-knuckled until that thing happens. And then you think it's done, and then it keeps going.
Did you know about what happened with Janet Leigh?
The
lady in the shower.
Yes. Yes, okay. Yes.
Did you know it was going to happen that early?
No.
Oh, good. Not bad for a 53-year-old film, huh?
Nope.
Okay. We got a few minutes left. And last week I talked about director and stunt coordinator and stuntman Hal Needham passing.
Right.
We talked a little bit. Yes, he worked with Burt Reynolds and did some really fun car chase films and some really bad action films.
Mm-hmm.
But going through his... list of credits, official and uncredited stuff as far as stunt coordinator and stunt man.
He ghost directed Schindler's List.
Yeah, I could see that. Rafe Fiennes jumping the Jeep over the commode, that scene. So, but like apparently his first film, and he talks about this in his memoir, which, and you can hear the interview on Fresh Air, but he was out on a wing in The Spirit of St. Louis, the Jimmy Stewart film from 1957.
Wow.
So, but going through it, he worked on Major Dundee. He did a few John Wayne films like
Paul Hogan movies always made me laugh.
Paul Hogan movies?
Major Dundee.
Oh, very good. Sam Peckinpah and Paul Hogan. No, it's okay.
Especially to Florida.
But not California.
Yeah.
He also worked on The War Wagon, Hellfighters, Bandolero. But I remember it was talked about on Fresh Air. He did a car jump in the Burt Reynolds film White Lightning, where a car jumps over and lands on a moving barge. And in the film, it's not a clean jump. The car lands, and the back end is still kind of splashing into the water, but it stays.
Wow.
Well, it wasn't supposed to happen that way, but guess what? They kept it. Also, another one, whether you know the film or not, the 1974 John Wayne cop film, because he was 5 years too late after Dirty Harry. There was a film called McHugh, and he made a car roll 9 times, which at that time was a record. That's
action movies were so much better before computer graphics
because it actually happened.
Yeah,
worked on Rio Lobo, Little Big Man, Chisholm, The Undefeated, Take a Hard Ride, worked on Gator, and then by 1977 had worked enough with Burt in a lot of his films that he was able to direct. So. But, yeah, really impressive stuff. And, yes, we sound like old people about, there are stunts when they were actually done by stunt men and stunt women, and they actually happened, and no computer graphics. And you should check out Death Proof, whether you like Tarantino or not, because that's actually Zoe Bell in a car. But he got an honorary Oscar, and he's only the second guy to get an award, an Academy Award, in any way, shape, or form involving stunt work. First one, Tarantino presented it to him, but apparently he's one of the Japanese stuntmen from the 50s got the first one. So, there is that. But very impressive stunt work. Go to IMDb, check out some of the titles, and you can actually see real stunts done by real human beings. Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Ed, got a minute to plug anything?
Wild in the Streets. Wild in the Streets was made in the late 60s. I like to plug this.
Either Wild in the Streets or Local Hero. You know, you should host a screening of that at that new bar theater on the West Side.
Oh yeah, Studio Movie Grill. Yeah,
we'll have to talk to him about that.
That'd be fun.
Okay,
be
but
fun.
No, Wild in the Streets. Shelley Winters.
Shelley Winters. Young
Richard Pryor.
Young Richard Pryor. Christopher Jones. That rebel.
Studio creation of a rebel.
Teenagers take over the United States. Adults are given LSD and put into peace camps. Oh, the drama. I love the movie. My parents were at the Pendleton Pike Drive-In. My parents were laughing. I'm looking at them going, yeah, you keep laughing. When it really happens, you won't be laughing.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
What a seamless transition there.
Has spoken.
Ed, thank you so much. Always good to have you here.
That was fun.
All right, so until next time, go see a good movie, even if it's Great Expectations, which opens next week, we hope. You deserve it. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org. Kobe, give love to our followers.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.